Coming up on This Week in Radio Tech, we're live at the Tuscany Hotel and Suites in Las Vegas at the Public Radio Engineering Conference. Let's see, David Antoine is coming up here. Alex Hartman's on here. Sean Dolan's going to be on.
I can't wait to see me.
I can't wait either. It's coming up next on TWIRT.
This Week in Radio Tech is brought to you by Broadcasters General Store, with outstanding service, savings, and support, online at bgs.cc. By Broadcast Bionics, with the Bionic Studio, including talk show control, social media, and visual radio, Broadcast Bionics brings exceptional audience engagement to radio and TV. By Angry Audio, audio problems disappear when you get angry at angryaudio.com. By Nautel, worry-free transmission you can count on with outstanding control, reliability, efficiencies, and Nautel's unmatched 24/7 customer support. Online at Nautel.com. And by MaxConnect Wireless, prioritized high-speed internet service designed for transmitter sites and remote broadcasts.
Hey, welcome into This Week in Radio Tech, the show where everything from the microphone to the light bulb at the top of the tower. I'm not in my usual office. I'm not in the Telos Alliance studio, Nashville, as you got my Telos Alliance badge on right there. You see that? And I've also got my badge for the Association of Public Radio Engineers for their conference called the Public Radio Engineering Conference, PREC. That's a lot of letters. And we're so glad you joined us. Hey, let's bring in Kevin Trueblood. Kevin, it's good to see you. We got a two-shot available here. Kevin? I know. There we go. Hey, all Kevin, right. It's good to see you, man.
Yeah, you too. It's good to see you and be here.
You've been on the show before. You tell me about what you do.
So I am the Associate General Manager for Technology and Operations for WGCU Public Media. We're public television and radio in Southwest Florida. I've got a contract business that handles a lot of clients as well across Florida. So I stay fairly busy these days.
And you were with us on a show some months back after the aftermath of Hurricane Ian.
Yeah, there's still a lot, and that's what I did today is gave a presentation about some of the lessons learned, and a lot of it was stuff we had talked about on your previous show, basically learning about disaster recovery and a lot of the things that you can do to basically stay ahead of the game and be proactive in recovering from a disaster, because for a lot of places, even if you think you're like in the Midwest or someplace that doesn't deal with them, you're going to deal with it at some point in the future, and making a plan and knowing what you're going to do after a storm kind of event really puts you ahead of the game as far as your reaction.
Well, so much of the country is subject to tornadoes, flooding. Even if you're not in a hurricane alley,
right,
you have these other things, even really bad thunderstorms, straight line winds.
Exactly. So having backup facilities or even resources or personnel, things like that, that's, you know, things that we learned, especially after Ian, in being able to help us recover a lot faster.
So when we did a show together after Ian and about the recovery, you, I think, was Hal Neller on the show?
Yeah, Hal was there too.
And you were both like still catching your breath after all this. So you've had some months to think about this now. Do any more thoughts come to mind as to, well, you know, we didn't even realize we did this and it worked, or it really been good to have such and so in place. Is there more you figured out?
You know, I think a lot of the lessons still apply. You know, that as far as having backup facilities, having a plan and things like that, as I'd mentioned earlier. But one of the big takeaways I didn't realize until after the fact is how much taking care of the people aspect of it, taking care of your staff, making sure they have the resources. As I mentioned in my presentation earlier today, you know, covering a significant event, a major disaster like that, we actually had grief counselors come in that work with journalists and go to wartime places, journalists that have been through war, that have been through mass shootings, major traumatic events, to help them recover from it, because it takes a big toll on people's mental health.
Tell me about living facilities. You've got a fairly good facility there, WGCU. Not everybody, of course, has that. But how important was it to have living facilities, and what are some ideas for accommodating people who need to sleep and shower?
Well, in our case, we ran out of utility water. So obviously, we didn't have restroom facilities. We didn't have any kinds of those things. So that posed a big challenge when you have upwards of, you know, 60 to 80 people in our building like we did that we had to accommodate. What I've known some broadcasters to do in those cases, they'll pull up an RV. That'll provide them like a quiet sleeping space, even a limited amount of water, but at least there's a working shower and a bathroom that they've got on site. So I've known people that have done that where they'll park an RV on site. You can also bring in, portable restrooms and things like that. So having those resources available, is important to make sure everybody's comfortable.
I'm sure there's jokes going around. Well, you know, pick a buddy and y'all going to shower together.
Maybe. But yeah, I mean, anything's better than having to teach people how to use a bucket, something like that. So, I mean, these are all things that you don't realize at the time. You're thinking, there's a minimal chance something like that can happen. But, if you're an outlet that really takes serving the community seriously and you have journalists and you have on-air staff and you are committed to being there for the community in times like this, these are the things you have to think about, because you're going to have to survive on your own basically for potentially a few days, if not longer.
Now, you're in Florida, and Florida being Florida, hurricanes are expected every few years. Sure. and the disaster that comes with that. And you guys in Florida, you have some kind of a hurricane network. I mean, you guys really, the public radio group really works together to provide that kind of information. Most states, I suppose, wouldn't have as much need for that, and I guess probably likely wouldn't have that. So tell me about, what was the impetus for, or how do you guys work together for play-by-play hurricane coverage?
Yeah, it's actually a great setup. It's called the Florida Radio Emergency Network.
Okay.
And it's got a really great communications program that has a professional public radio stations, and they've actually got commercial stations that are all owned by the University of Florida, and they're all in the same facility. And there's an alliance in Florida called Florida Public, and they basically represent all the Florida public television radio stations at the state level. So they help secure funding and things like that, and also represent sales. They do a lot of things. But one of the things they did about a decade ago was they founded the Florida Public Radio Emergency Network. And we have this audio stream that is delivered to all the Florida public stations, that they have full-time meteorologists on staff. They have on-air talent.
And it's not Jim Cantore, is it?
It isn't, but they're, I tell you, those folks are really good at what they do. Okay. What they will do is they supplement our local coverage. And so, like, for instance, during Hurricane Ian, they will provide us 30 minutes every hour of content. That's with meteorologists that are talking about the storm and then any kind of breaking news. And then we backfill it locally. And that's available to any public station. It all goes out at once. And then we backfill the rest of the time with our own local content. So between the two of us, we're providing that for our community. And that's something that we wouldn't necessarily be able to have on our own. But collectively, we're able to split those costs and provide that resource.
Wow. Wow. Awesome. Anything you want to tell us about SBE activities coming up?
Yeah, so we've got our meeting coming up on Monday night, and there's also going to be a big drawing that's there, so you can win some prizes and find out information about what's going on.
Oh, this is the membership meeting.
The membership meeting that's coming up on Monday night, so everybody's welcome to attend that. We've got the board of directors meeting coming up on Sunday morning. I don't know if there's any huge news to announce just yet, but we're always looking. We're actually looking at our strategic plan that's coming up this year. To help kind of make sure that our membership is basically providing the best value for everybody who is a member.
I've noticed in Nashville, and part of it's up to me, so I've noticed it because I'm doing it, is that we're, post-COVID, we're finally getting back into some meetings. We have some meetings scheduled. It was shortly after post-COVID, it was tough to find restaurants that would accommodate. So they had all changed their business plans.
Right, right. Yeah, and there's been a lot of chapters that have struggled to get back on their feet after COVID. And I'll admit, even our chapter, our local chapter that I'm the chair of, has had that same issue. Yeah. But we found a lot of chapters have kind of adopted hybrid models where they're doing both virtual and in-person meetings, or both. So they're figuring out what works best for everybody, even if it's something different than they've traditionally done.
We're having an Ennis workshop on Saturday?
Tomorrow and Saturday. Oh, okay. So I'm actually presenting at that tomorrow. So it's going to be, I've been working on presentations for weeks now. The RF 101 is actually a great session. I actually know somebody who's going to be there who's a new engineer that they're going to learn kind of everything they need from the ground up, and then also ATSC-3 as well.
Oh, yeah. Mark Aitken, I believe, is going to be presenting and putting audio on that.
I'm presenting. I'm presenting tomorrow too.
Oh, perfect. Okay. I'll see you there.
Okay. Yeah. Good thing I got my presentation done this
exactly.
morning.
Exactly. Yeah. I got mine finished here not long ago too.
Wow. Wow. Kevin, it's been great talking
to you. Absolutely.
Appreciate
it. Good to see you, Kirk.
And of course, you're here at the public radio conference because WGCU is.
Yeah. We're a public television station and radio station. And I did a presentation this morning and then I'll be at the NS conference tomorrow and then here next week as well.
Cool.
All right.
Hey, on your way out, if you want to tap Joby and his friend, that'd be great.
All right, will do.
Thank you, Kirk. We are live here at the Tuscany Hotel and Suites in Las Vegas. I'm Kirk Harnack, and not in the TELUS Alliance studio today, but here on my own. Chris Tarr is really busy today, and he couldn't make it. Hopefully, he'll be able to join us next week when we're on the NAB show floor. Hey, I want to remind you real quick about Nautel and all the things that they do for us as broadcast engineers. You can go to their website, and if you head on over to nautel.com/NAB. My goodness, you'll find a lot of the things that they do for NAB that they're doing for you. If you're here in Las Vegas, please come see the Nautel booth. I went by it just yesterday as they were building it. A lot going on there. It's going to be an amazing booth. They've have several new technology things to announce. A major HD radio announcement coming up. They have a new transmitter model. They're going to introduce you more seriously to these VX series of rack mount FM transmitters. Also a preview of finally the advanced user interface, the AUI, that doesn't need Flash, doesn't need Java. It's or whatever. It just works in your browser. And of course the Nautel users group coming up on Sunday morning. You can still register for that. I don't know if you'll get lunch or not, but you can. They have a live stream of it. So you can live stream that as well on Sunday. It's 11:30 a.m. Eastern time from the Flamingo Las Vegas. Check that out. I'm going to be there for a good part of that, and I hope to see you there as well. Nautel.com/NAB is the place to go. Really appreciate Nautel and the amazing things they do for the industry. Not only, of course, they're a manufacturer, and they have everything to gain by gaining your trust and respect and making great products. But their website gives you a lot of resources that you can take advantage of, make yourself look smarter. That's my secret. and then all the events that they put on. So Jeff Welton may be here. I don't know. I'd love to talk to Jeff. Maybe he'll stop by during the hour. Well, we're continuing with This Week in Radio Tech, and I've got a new guest here. Good morning. I'm Kirk. I see you. Scott, tell me about yourself.
I'm Scott Hanley, General Manager of WZUM in Pittsburgh. Longtime manager of public radio stations in the NPR system for a long time, but kind of stepped back from that. But more recently at WBHM in Birmingham, WDUQ in Pittsburgh. I was on the NPR board for a number of years, have been involved with APRE since its beginning, years and years ago. I also was chair of the distribution committee for NPR for about 5 years, back when we rolled out the Content Depot.
Oh my goodness, we could have two whole shows just with what you know. So I kind of give you the floor. What would you like to talk about? I like to give our audience, you know, what are you passionate about? What's on your horizon right now? What do you think engineers these days ought to know that you already know?
Well, I guess the big thing is making sure that our community, our general managers, our staff, recognize the fact that by being broadcasters, we have a special charge, but we also actually have a special limitation because we are the only media that is licensed by the federal government to serve the public interest, convenience, and necessity. Websites are not.
Right.
Newspapers are not.
Right.
Apps are not. So all of that comes to us, but over the last 100 years, that's made broadcasting and broadcasters something special. And it makes engineers something even more special because they make it all possible.
You know, it's interesting that to some extent, the broadcaster mindset of convenience, necessity, I'm sorry, what?
Public interest, convenience, and necessity, the Radio Act of 1927.
Yes, yes. Well, a lot of that mentality, I think, does spill over into other media, but it's ingrained into what we do as broadcasters.
Yeah, I would argue that, in fact, the reason we have journalism aspirations that we have today comes directly from that charge back in the late 1920s. Because before then, it was pretty much get what you want out of the newspaper business and so much more.
So from a technology point of view, what do you see happening that helps us fulfill that charge from 1926?
Well, there's so many opportunities now and so many platforms that, you know, we need to rethink for the people that are creating content, need to rethink how we can make sure it's useful for everyone. And make sure it lives on beyond just the initial broadcast, because now the utility of what we make and what we create goes far beyond just the moment of the wisp of air that broadcasts, because people don't listen the way they used to.
Right.
So the more we can think brevity and clarity about what we're creating every day, the more it can live on in perpetuity. You know, I'm a 40-year broadcast veteran, and looking in my basement right now, and my wife, my historian wife, wants to make sure I get the archives together of all the things that I've been involved with over 40 years. And you recognize you need to do that. But now we have to figure out how to merge all the technology from 1978 and 1988. And, you know, I have DAP machines, reel-to-reel tapes. I have all sorts of archival material. And just making sure we don't lose anything that we want to make sure we keep is one of the big charges we have today. But that also means the things from last week. Because quite often, a lot of our media that we are creating becomes like a hothouse flower. And it's up to us to keep it, because Facebook or Twitter is not going to do it for us.
You know, technology these days makes it easy for nearly any citizen to be an amateur journalist. And I wonder if you have any thoughts, since you've been in these roles before, about the you know, what role citizen amateur journalists play versus more curated news and information coming from an outlet where they, on the one hand, they have standards to uphold. On the other hand, they might have a more narrow, view of their audience. Maybe you can compare and contrast what you can do today that you couldn't do before and how that affects our thinking.
I've been thinking a lot about that over the last 10, 15 years. I think we've made a mistake in that we thought that citizen journalists were our competition, but in fact, what were we when we were 15 years old? You know, with our cassette recorders in our bedrooms making radio shows. You know, but the dilemma is, you know, in 1978, when I first started in radio, I got paid to be in radio, you know, there was the graveyard shift on Sunday nights, hosting running the board for the Greek Melodies Hour and running the reel-to-reel tapes on ABC Network and doing a little bit of music show. You know, you got the chance to be bad.
Yes.
And we need to encourage people to try out their chops, to practice, and to get better. And, you know, if there's ways we can do that and encourage and nurture that, it's more and more important that we do that for the future. Because, you know, fortunately here at the conference today, for the engineering conference, we're seeing more new faces and younger faces, which I'm very excited about. But we need to make sure we keep open hearts and open minds about everyone who shows any interest in the sorts of things we're aspiring to do. So I think citizen journalists, they need curation, they need help, they need mentoring, they need coaching, and we need to make sure we have places and room for exactly that to happen, just like it did when we got started.
You did point out that there are some younger engineers here, and my goodness, that's so true. I just realized when I've walked through the room a couple of times, there are young faces there.
Yeah, it's very encouraging, and the technical solution making of engineers is something to be marveled with. But for me, who have been mostly a general manager for most of my career, making sure we can help make decisions about what we do with our technology. In fact, I'm doing a session later just about Ask the GM, because the long list of things and charges and influences and problems that I need to be solved with technology, it comes from all the different charges we have. There's technical issues, it's community issues, there's funding issues. So, you know, we need to work very closely with our technical teams to make sure we're making the best choices possible, knowing that although we can do anything, we can't do everything.
Yeah, and prioritizing the things that you can do seems pretty important.
Yes, and unfortunately, quite often, the highest priority, our audience, ends up being the bottom of the barrel, unless it's competitive. Yeah. And of course, that can go away quite quickly if some other competitor comes up.
One last question. So being in a general manager position, how are you looking how would you look at making technical hires these days? And we tend to think that's bifurcated. You're either an audio video guy or you're an IT person. And I would like to see more of the combination of these two. Alex Hartman, who spoke here today, is a great example of somebody who really knows both very, very well. But there's not too many Alex Hartmans in the world.
Well, I you could say the same thing about content creators too. I think these are artificial constraints we're putting on our own thinking, because the reality is what job needs to be done is the job that you try to take care of. And that includes the transmitter site. It also includes the website. It also includes the gear and technology. It even includes, the setup you have here for being able to do video on the fly with remarkable technology that was unthinkable of 10 years ago, right. is all a part of the solution-making process. So I don't think there's any real bifurcation at all, because engineering is about finding solutions and sustainable solutions. So it's not good enough to have it work once. Yeah. It needs to work all the time. And that's the fun about engineering as opposed to science. Science, you do an experiment once and if it works, then it's something to write a paper about. In engineering, we're about solving problems and making it work.
Scott, where are you calling home these days? You said Birmingham?
I'm around south of Pittsburgh. Okay. I live in Washington, PA, and we broadcast out of Pittsburgh. So it's a great, great fun now to be doing jazz full time.
I used to travel a lot for my employer, Telos Alliance, and Pittsburgh was one of my favorite cities to come to. I just always had a good time there. The broadcasters were always very professional, and I just had a good time.
I was also president of the Pittsburgh Radio Organization for about a decade, too. Wow. So, yeah, we've had a great community of broadcasters in that city for about 100 years.
And your station is a jazz format?
Jazz format, WZUM, AM and FM. We've got AM signal in Braddock, Pennsylvania, a translator north of downtown, and also an FM signal out of Bethany, West Virginia.
Cool. Very nice.
So we're having a good time. And also the jazz community, as the radio station is there to convene it, is booming, blossoming. It's a great connection with the community.
Thanks for your time, Scott. I appreciate it very, very much. Hey, one of those guys over there, send one of them over here on your way out. It's Kirk Harnack. We're doing This Week in Radio Tech live from the Tuscany Hotel and Casino and Suites and Conference Center here in Las Vegas. I'm at the Public Radio Engineering Conference for 2022. We're going to take a quick break and hear from Broadcast Bionics. We'll be right back.
Welcome to the Bionic Studio. The Bionic Studio brings all audience interaction to the fingertips of a production team in radio, TV, and podcast. Our workflow-led system is working 24/7 around the world for small broadcasters and national and international networks. Our telephony module, Bionic Talk Show, allows cost-effective centralization, remote operation, scalability, and resilience across an entire network of stations, but at the same time is used in single-studio self-op environments. Social media curation and activity is now considered a broadcast critical part of programming. Bionic Social means the studio isn't overwhelmed with a wall of interaction from an ever-growing number of social platforms. We combine SMS, MMS, and email together with a speech-to-text service for listeners using smart speakers. We enable studio teams to curate, filter, and display all platforms in one place, and post text, images, and video content to multiple platforms in one operation. Effortless collection of video content with Bionic Director has helped position some of the world's most successful stations as leaders in viral content, generating appointments to listen and free marketing via retweets and shares. Bionic Contest enables end-to-end tracking of on-air competitions, live reads, and prizes. These could be on-air contests, automated SMS entry, or online. Anywhere, and Skype TX for Radio brings high-quality audio and video contribution into the studio with ease. No need for dedicated PCs to run different applications. Everything is controlled within the Bionic Studio UI. And incoming connections are visible to users, along with all other platforms. Our codec integration enables connection, algorithm configuration, and directory to a wide range of IP and ISDN codecs. The Bionic Studio, a unique suite of products designed to enable your talent to work smarter.
Thanks a lot to Broadcast Bionics and the Bionic Studio. And we're going to have Dan McQuillan as our guest coming up sometime in the next few weeks. He's got a very cool product. He's already introduced. It's called Virtual Rack. So we're going to be finding out about Virtual Rack in the coming weeks. Here we are in Las Vegas at the Tuscany Suites Casino Conference Center. Nice bathrooms, all that. I'm Kirk Harnack here with Rich Parker. Hi, Rich.
It's good to see you.
It's great to see you.
Back again. I wasn't sure I was going to be here this year, but here I am. And I'm learning a lot. It's been really great. I'm glad I came.
How were your flights?
They were okay. Coming from Alaska, we go through Seattle, and then Seattle to Las Vegas is pretty straightforward.
So you watch some of the same presentation. Hey, I want to see you.
Yeah.
We're going to... You saw some of the same presentations I did this morning. What have you seen so far that perked your ears up?
Well, you know, a lot of the stuff at project management, I like the Tony Peterle's thing about the Smart FM, I think it's called.
Smart FM,
and
yeah.
Because it has some applications, one of our new translators, well, I didn't put it in. Scott Tradish worked with Becky Myers from KCAW to put in a new Carrizo at one of the really, really remote sites, Port Alexander, not Port Arthur that he talked about.
Okay.
But Port Alexander, they use just all diesel power and some solar and battery backups. And so I'm looking at some of the things that he said that not only will he be able to modulate the power, but if we compress the signal more, it actually works better and it can get more savings. And I think for a small translator site that's in a rural area with a lot of marine traffic,
yeah,
that we can go ahead and compress it and get the best savings for their money. He also talked about turning the power down at night and different things when people are not out fishing or, you know, when they're not out in the boats. So I learned a lot from that.
And just to give people some context, the folks at Ecresso Transmitters have come up with a patented way to dynamically reduce FM power level.
Correct.
If the modulation index, if the programming would not suffer. Right. And okay. With AM, this is a thing with AMDCL.
Right, AMDCL. Yeah, that worked. That's the same idea, but it worked.
And I looked at the potential power savings, and, you know, on the one hand, is it dramatic or not dramatic? Well, if you pay a lot for your power, if power is precious,
right,
it's dramatic.
It is dramatic. I mean, we pay a little over 10 cents a kilowatt hour in Juneau. We're quite lucky because we have water power and all that kind of stuff right there. But, you know, at Port Alexander, it's all generated by diesel that has to be shipped in on a barge.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of places in Alaska like that. So I can see that being good. I'm trying to think, what else did we see today? So much. Just a really good presentation.
I had some questions for Alex Hartman, his presentation about virtualizing.
I did. And we're still looking at that. I was really disappointed. I'm sorry to, you know, come down on anybody. But he said he had the same experience I had with a particular automation vendor that it couldn't make it work on virtualization.
Well, actually, and to speak to that, because I work for a company that does a lot of virtualization, we'd like to think, because people who make virtualizing systems, VMware, they we tend to claim, hey, just put your computer on here, it'll work. Well, not everything does. And sometimes software's got to be seriously reworked to work in a different environment. And it ain't easy.
No, it's not. And we spend a lot of time and money just proving that it didn't work, and Alex confirmed the same thing.
Yeah.
There's companies that have done it in the past, but for the small stations in Alaska, we're kind of stuck with how do we change? You know, it's like you can't spend a few $100,000 to get a new automation system, so it's kind of the double we know. And I mean, they provide good support. It's just that it didn't do what I hoped it would do in the virtualization arena. So, you know, it's fine. We're working through.
So the advice that comes out of that is you got to ask around and find out what has been shown to work.
Right. And I mean, they told us they didn't think it would work and they didn't think they could support it. But there were people, unbeknownst to me, in the Midwest that were doing it, but it turns out that they did it for a while and figured out it didn't actually work. So, you know, it's just one of the, it happens sometimes, you know, but we're moving past that. Not a plug for you guys, but as we're upgrading our studios, we're doing more and more Axia stuff. And I really love the IQ series because instead of having a full console, I can just have basically what's a virtual work surface, and then I can have as many nodes as I need for each studio. And what that does is it frees us up to have a lower cost of entry into a new studio and a quick way to fix it. We have a lot of old elements in Juneau.
Yeah.
And they're, 12, 15 years old, and we're replacing parts and modules and faders, and, you know, everything's getting old. I mean, it's a great system, but we need to move past that. And so some of the new stations, I put in new IQ stuff at KFSK in Petersburg.
Yeah.
Some other stations are putting it in. And, you know, so any of those are great ideas. I just talked to, I'm having a brain freeze, but you know, from the representative from what used to be Digigram.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And she's saying they're working on actually AOP, AOIP drivers.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good direction to go. I think that it's just so flexible and it allows you. In fact, we use AOIP drivers on Alaska without having an Axia system. All I did is buy a couple of nodes.
Yeah.
and I put the Axios IOP drivers on the computers. Sure. And so that worked. It was an easy way to get into it and eliminate a lot of wiring. So
yeah, and you've got very high quality sound cards, via the nodes.
Well, right. So we didn't have to buy new sound cards. I mean, I was talking to her, and she said, well, maybe we can work out a trade, because I have, a small fortune in ISA Digigram cards lying around in the shop somewhere, right? Yeah. And, and he mentioned that thing about, well, they do make an adapter. And I'm like, I'm not going to do that. So, yeah.
Well, the one thing about standards, there's so many of them.
There are. But, I mean, I've been doing this for a while, and I'm really excited about the things that are coming down the pike that are working. New transmitters. I took out an old, well, it was basically a Collins Rockwell transmitter at K2. We took it out, and there was a BE in its place that was about half as big. And now, excuse me, I find that I can get a similar 1,000-watt transmitter that's, about as big as the exciter was for the BE.
Yes.
And that I can carry up the stairs by myself. Yes. Now, I like the direction that things are going. I'm not convinced about everything being virtual, because a lot of our stations don't have, or in the cloud even, because a lot of our stations don't have the kind of internet access that makes that safe and practical. But I think that's a combination of the two would be, have local things and also things we can offload to the cloud that in an emergency situation we could, fall over to and all that. So there's a lot of good things. I'm glad I came. I wasn't going to come this year, because I was here last year, and I thought, well, kind of a funny personal story. My dad turned 98 last month.
Wow.
And my brother is going out there to visit him in North Miami Beach from Seattle. And I said, okay, I'm going to go to the lower 48, and I'll stop at PREC and NAB, and I'll go out and meet him in North Miami Beach and see my dad, who's 98. And, you hate to say it, but I might not see him again, in this lifetime, especially from Alaska, although he keeps reminding me that his grandfather lived to be 104. So,
wow.
So maybe.
You'll see me again.
Excuse me. I'm sorry. It's very dry here. I apologize. I come from a rainforest where it's very wet.
Yes.
And so being in Alaska, I'm like, my eyes dry out, my throat dries out, everything dries out. But anyway, it's great to be here, and it's great to see everybody, make some contacts. And, the thing about being here is, I had some offline conversations, with Mike Beach and some of the folks from PRSS about things that we need and things we can do. And they're like, oh yeah, just do this. Just give us a, give us a note and call. So it's hard to explain how much happens just walking up and down the halls.
I'm curious about one thing. Last year you won this award.
I did.
And did you know that before you came here?
Well, I did.
Okay.
And that's because I was not going to come. And my wife said, oh, Rich, and Vic had been calling my wife. Vic and my wife have been friends ever since we were in Vermont. And they kept calling me saying, she kept telling me, oh, Rich, you should go this year. You haven't been in a long time with COVID and everything. You should go. And I go, I'm still not sure I want to go. And she said, no, you really have to go. And I go, I just don't think, I had no idea. I'm such a dumb husband. She's like, no, you really got, I'm thinking, why is my wife telling me I got to go? So finally, Vic and oh my gosh, we're just talking to him.
Who? Scott?
Scott, yeah. Rich, Vic and Scott called me up, and they go, okay, look, this is going to be a surprise, but you really have to come because you're getting this award. And I was like, okay, thanks. And then I was like, well, I don't understand. What did I do? What have I ever done? And, it was just, I just do my job. And
well, you've been Rich Parker.
I've been Rich Parker. I'm like the guy that always asks the question that nobody else wants to ask all the time. I always ask the hard questions,
And well, they're good.
Thank you. Yeah. But I got that reputation. So anyway, it was good to be there and good to see everybody. And it was, anyway.
Rich, with Coast Alaska, you're in Juneau.
I am located in Juneau, and I serve the stations in Southeast Alaska mostly. Ketchikan, which I'm going to right after the show, after I see my dad.
Yeah.
Wrangell, Petersburg, Sitka. And then we also added Unalaska. And then Coast Alaska joined with APBI, which was the Alaska Public Broadcasting Company that was up north. And we've merged, so we have access to their engineers out of Anchorage, so they do most of the interior stations up in Alaska. So it's been a good transition, but it's you know, everything's tough financially. The governor is not really a big fan of public radio in any respect. And, you know, fundraising is going well, but it's just, we've got infrastructure needs that are, you know, getting more and more, you know, increasingly important.
Yeah.
So we're just working on that. There's a woman who is, I'm so bad with names lately, but anyway, it's a Charles Souther's stepmother.
Yeah.
From Diane Kaplan.
Okay.
Diane Kaplan she was at the Rasmussen Foundation, which was a granting organization in Alaska, and now she's on the board of CPB, and it's the first time that I'm aware of that we've ever had direct board membership on the board of CPB from Alaska.
Oh, okay.
You know, and then we also have Mary Petola, who's a new representative from Northern Alaska. So I think Alaska is becoming more and more known in the public eye for more than just oil, including with the, well, I guess you can't say climate. Well, I guess you can't say global warming, but you can say climate change. With the ice melting and things, the armed forces and Navy and people are looking more and more to Alaska as a strategic place again up north. So, you know, who knows what's the future is going to bring. But
the one thing I know about Alaska, it's a state.
It's very big. You ever take that? If you ever take that map of Alaska and lay it over the continental United States, it's huge. I mean, people say, oh, there was an earthquake in Anchorage. Were you guys okay? I go, well, it was like 750 miles away.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
It's like asking somebody in D.C., well, was the hurricane bad in Florida? You know, and I'm like, well, we read it on the news. Yeah, it was, you know, so yeah, we're pretty far.
We're going to, we got several more guests to see. Rich, I appreciate your time so
Thank
much.
Thank you so much. It's always good to talk to you.
I have one little task for you. You see, there's several gentlemen standing over there. I need you to pick one and send them over here.
Oh, man. All right. I'll let them fight it out. I'm going to put in a plug right here for my shirt.
Oh, yeah.
Because this is some swag that I got a couple years ago from Shavley Labs.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that they, I'm really hoping that the day comes when they find a buyer and things get back in. It's a great company. I've loved working with them. Angela Gillespie and all the people there are so good to us. So I thought I'd wear that shirt to our honor this year.
Good deal. Looks good.
Good to see you.
Thank you, sir. Over here. Yeah, get somebody. They're all waiting in the wings. It's This Week in Radio Tech. We're live in Las Vegas at the Tuscany Hotel Suites, Casino, Conference Center, and Big Beautiful Bathrooms. I'm Kirk Harnack. I wish Chris Tarr was here today, but he can't be here today. Maybe he'll be here next week. Speaking of next week, we'll be live on the show floor, probably with Josh Bone and a bunch of folks there. Come on in here. David, good to see you, man. David Antoine, am I saying it right?
Antoine, absolutely.
And you've taken over engineering duties in New Jersey.
At WBGO.
And that's where our dearly beloved Chris Tobin used to work.
That's right.
Oh, man, I miss Chris every day.
Yeah.
And certainly every Thursday.
Yes. Rest in peace, Chris.
Well, it's good to see you. Tell me about what's either what you've learned here, what's happening at BGO, what engineering was. Let me get you to lean forward here. Come up close to me, unless I have bad breath.
No.
Okay. Trying to get you in the camera.
All right.
Good. What's going on?
What's going on at BGO? We are we're doing a lot of upgrading. Yeah. We have had a fully functional analog facility.
Right.
Older PR&E consoles, wave digital consoles. Yeah.
Yeah.
That are working, but as you know, no parts for them.
Yeah.
So as they start to fail, we have to think otherwise. So we're actually looking at IQS and Altus coming down the road.
Now, those are software-based, or those are consoles you can access with a browser.
Yes.
And control them.
Container, Docker-based. Yeah, we're looking at that technology.
Now, let me back up one second. During COVID, Chris Tobin quickly implemented putting all the programming at the transmitter site, and then people worked from home for the longest time.
And they still are.
What?
And they still are.
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
So are you hoping to lure them back into the station?
I don't know if we have enough money to do so.
Oh, but that's what a browser-based console will do for you. They could run the console from home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right now, they're still using the system that Chris implemented with DJB, and it's basically, they're voice tracking, and they basically need a microphone, laptop, and internet.
Right.
And they're working,
right,
and have been for the past 3 years.
And the listeners either don't know or hardly know.
Both. In fact, I had to call up Chris. I wasn't back working for the station, but I always streamed it when I was working. And I called up Chris one day. I said, where are the announcers? And he explained it to me. So, yeah. So, yeah, a lot of people don't know. It took me a minute to figure it out. But they hadn't missed a beat in 3 years.
You know, a careful listener might say, the air conditioning hum sounds different during different shifts.
I know, right? It does, yeah.
The room tone.
Yeah. Well, we have one announcer that does his show from his kitchen table.
Yeah, sure.
So, yeah, but, you know, we're moving along. We haven't missed a beat. We have new management at the station, and we're doing a lot of different things. One of the things that we do at the station is live performances.
I was going to ask, you still do live performances?
We do live performances. Okay. We're a jazz station. Okay.
They're not at home. They come in the station.
No, they come in the station. Okay. We've had musicians and artists come into the station. What happens in the New York area every April for us is something called Jazz Appreciation Month. And what that means is a lot of your professional musicians are either professors or teachers at local colleges and high schools. And what they do is they bring in their, we invite them to bring in their student orchestras and actually perform at the station.
Wow.
And we will record them either video and or audio and air them back over our airwaves or feature them on our YouTube channel.
You know, we were talking about technology early in the show, and that's all we talk about. You guys, WBGO, you've got an amazing website. So if you're not in the Newark area, you can still enjoy a lot of things from WBGO.
Let me tell you one of the things we found out about our web stream, and you know this as well, that a lot of radio stations these days, their web stream is almost as important, if not more important, than their terrestrial signal.
Yeah, that worldwide transmitter.
Yes. Last pledge drive, we received donations during our pledge drive from scientists in Antarctica.
What? I didn't know they had Xfinity down there. They have some kind of internet.
They got some. Yeah, you can imagine their internet is probably something to be envious for most of us.
I don't think even Elon Musk flies satellites down there. I don't know.
Yeah, we had donations from the scientists in Antarctica.
Wow.
During our pledge drive.
Wow, how about that?
Yeah.
That's so cool.
Yeah, it is.
So cool. Well, I'm glad to hear you're going to be moving into the realm of audio consoles that are browser based. You just and you're not doing the mixing. I mean, the audio's not on the laptop. The control for the mixing is on the computer.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah. We think it's the way to go. I mean, a lot of things precipitated that, but you know, COVID was one thing, but also the supply chain issues precipitated that. It's hard to get hardware.
Yeah. So far we haven't had any software stuck on a boat off Los Angeles.
Correct.
In fact, this summer I'm going to be implementing similar to what you're doing. Mm-hmm. In Oxford, Mississippi, I'm building a station for the college kids in Oxford. Mm-hmm. And we're going to be implementing that. In fact, we're putting everything like Chris Tobin did at the transmitter site. And people can remote control it from wherever.
Now, one of the things I did do after I came back was moved everything back to the studio from the transmitter site. Right. Everything now is originating from the studio, but I have complete remote capabilities. In fact, I can pull it up. I can pull up the system on my iPad right now, right from where we're sitting, if I had to. Yeah,
David, we got to move on, man. Thank you so much for coming by.
It's a pleasure to talk to you. Always,
yes. I'll see you around the show, right?
Ready.
Okay. David Antoine, WBGO chief engineer. He's the man who took over after Chris Tobin passed away. So it's great to always be in touch with David. Let me see if Shane Finch might be available because I've got a job for him. Come on in. It's This Week in Radio Tech live from Las Vegas and the Public Radio Engineering Conference, PREC. And I want you to meet my friend. I got to know this guy a little bit better. Scoot over here next to me. I don't have cooties. And our trip to New York. We went to New York City a few weeks ago.
Wonderful time. Enjoyed our personal and professional time together and getting to know Carmen, your beautiful wife. It's wonderful.
I want to thank you for introducing me to the folks at WABC 77. That station was purchased by a local entrepreneur, a wealthy guy who owns grocery stores. And what's he done with that station?
amazing things, you know. It's a huge numbers, and he's keeping AM alive in New York. It's really wonderful.
I Judge Jeanine passed by me. She didn't have time to say hi. Judge Jeanine Pirro.
She said hi to me.
She did.
She did.
See, there you go.
She actually got my picture taken with her.
Really?
Yes.
And then Rita Cosby was there.
Delightful person. Yeah. Really a wonderful person.
Oh, yeah. And that guy that always runs for mayor, Curtis Sliwa.
Yes, he was there as well. Yeah. All personalities on WABC.
Yeah.
So
Shane, tell us about what you do. A lot of people don't know your face or your name yet.
I'm Shane Finch. I'm the sales manager with Broadcasters General Store out of Ocala, Florida. I've been there about a year. I was with Inco Systems prior to that and Music Master prior to that.
Okay.
And then I had a long on-air and radio management career before that.
Okay. So at BGS, I mean, you guys have such a great reputation. Every time I do an ad for you guys, and we'll do a couple more here, but I always say, hey, you can go to the website, but call these people. They are actually really nice on the phone. You guys have computer systems that help you really track everybody's order, even through all the supply chain issues. You guys have better handle, your finger on the pulse of where my gear is. Just, it's an amazing business that you guys have built.
It was built on a solid foundation by Bill Shute back in 1979, and right. It's family owned by Dave and Carrie Kirsten, and it's just a rock solid company that believes in doing things the right way. So thank you for that compliment.
You know, I got acquainted with you guys when I was doing engineering work for Sam Phillips, the guy who discovered Elvis, and he owned a bunch of radio stations as well as Phillips Recording Service. And Sam would call me over to his house, and he'd pay me by the hour to sit there and pontificate about radio. And Sam would say, Kirk, I need to build a new control room up there down there at Alabama. Call them pretty little girls down there at BGS and see what we kind of do. Tell them to sharpen up their pencils.
Well, I'm fortunate enough to be friends with Sam's son, Jerry Phillips,
yeah.
and his operations manager, Nick Martin, and then Sam's granddaughter, Hallie Phillips, and they're just wonderful people, great operators, and
they
just
are.
True blue radio people and music lovers. So I did tell them that story, and when I had a chance to have dinner with them in Florence, Alabama, so they enjoyed hearing that about their dad. You know,
so one of the brands you guys carry, so many brands, even some television equipment, lighting, and just all kinds of things. But one of the brands you carry is Angry Audio, and I think you might have some announcements or things to say about Angry Audio, right?
Yeah, absolutely, okay.
Here,
it's exciting.
Right ahead.
All right. A good interviewer never gives away his microphone because he loses control of the interview. But we're going to do something called New Gear at NAB. And I'm sure you've probably heard about the Chameleon Sea Level. That's really taking the industry by storm. We're going to have one of those in the BGS booth on display, and then we're going to give it away at the end of the NAB. But we're also going to have one for people who can't go to the NAB that they can register for on our website at bgs.cc.
Same one or a second?
Different one. Second one. Yes.
Going
to give away two.
Okay.
Thanks to Mike and his team down there in Franklin, Tennessee. It's fun to go and visit with them because they're visionaries who see a problem and build something to fix it. And I always enjoy being with those kind of people. So that'll be going on. In fact, we'll promote it and we'll let you draw the winners and announce the winners on tour here in a couple of weeks.
Okay.
So bgs.cc is our website. Please feel free to go there starting Saturday.
Is that where you go to register?
That's where you can go to register, okay. But also you can come and register in our booth at 2213 in the Central Hall.
Central
Hall.
Okay, good deal. A lot of the radio businesses are in the West Hall, but a number of people are still in the Central Hall too.
You know, BGS has been in that sweet spot for so many years that it's hard to give that up because people know exactly where to go to look for us. And so it's kind of like a stamp as to where we'll be at the NAB. So.
You know, I speaking of Angry Audio and Mike Dosh, I got to spend a few minutes with him actually just on Monday of this week. I went and talked to him for a while. He's got a couple of in addition to I can't say what they are, but he's got some more cool stuff in the works.
Absolutely. It's going to be exciting. It's going to be a great 2023 and 24 for that team down there. They got a lot going on. Can I plug something else real quick? I heard you talking about the virtual rack.
Yeah.
Tomorrow from 11 until 1, if there are any engineers or any programmers or anything that are in the area, we're going to do a little lunch and learn with Dan McQuillan over at UNLV, and he's just going to talk about the virtual rack.
Oh.
And people are just can reach out to me at shane@bgs.cc. We'd love to have them come. We started it kind of as a thing that was directed more towards the Las Vegas SBE chapter, but we're getting more people that are reaching out and saying, hey, I heard Dan's going to be talking about the virtual rack. And so people can come and see it live if they're already in Vegas. We'd love to have you.
I would be there, but I'm giving a talk tomorrow at the SBE and its workshop. But we're going to interview Dan on the show coming up in the next 3-4 weeks or so. But the virtual rack is a very cool technology.
I have a sneaking suspicion that that might be the product that creates a good deal of the buzz at this year's NAB.
Yeah,
I think it's that kind of a product.
All right. So again, your lunch and learn is tomorrow, 11 to 1. Where?
At UNLV in the Greenspun Hall.
And to get an invitation, Shane@bgs.cc. That's you.
That's me.
Good deal.
Thank you, Kurt.
Appreciate you so very much. It's good to see you.
Want me to find you some more?
Yeah, bring somebody over here. Right. And I'm going to take this opportunity to talk about Max Connect Wireless. And hey, we're using it. It's right behind. Actually, it's Plan B. It's right behind me here. But I think we've got a little short video testimonial about Max Connect. And let's see if we can watch it right now.
With all of the recent cybersecurity attacks against large corporations, we were looking for a product that would give us the ultimate in security at our transmitter sites and as well as with our broadcast equipment. Max Connect fits the bill very well. Its greatest security feature is the fact that it gives you a single static IP address. Using this single static IP address allows us to close hundreds of open ports on our firewalls across the company and restrict access to only the Max Connect IPs. This has greatly reduced our exposure to the World Wide Web and made us much more secure moving forward. It's also given us the ability to expand as needed in a secure fashion.
Max Connect Wireless, it's super cool. I mean, Josh Bone, we're going to be doing the show next week from Josh Bone's Max Connect booth here at NAB. And I think we're going to do that show actually on Wednesday, but we'll replay it at the usual time on Thursday because the NAB isn't going on. There's the Max Connect Wireless website. You can go to maxconnect.com. I know it's spelled funny, but that's because you got to these days on the internet. Otherwise, you don't have a website. Thanks a lot for sponsoring This Week in Radio Tech. Josh, appreciate you very, very much. All right. Hey, I'm going to spend a few minutes here with Sean Dolan. Sean, welcome in. Good to see you, man.
Hey, thank you for having me. It's an honor. I've been watching and listening to this for a long time.
We used to be colleagues at Telos Alliance, and now we still get to call you when people need extra help that they may be willing to pay for.
And we still get to call you when we need solutions. So it works out.
So thinking about the technologies you may have seen today and what your company is doing, tell me what stations are doing these days that are kind of progressive, cutting edge, forward thinking.
Sure. I mean, I think the biggest challenge stations are having at this point is taking all of this technology that manufacturers and software publishers are creating that in and of itself is very useful, and then figuring out how it fits into their ecosystem. And so that's what we've had a lot of fun doing, found a lot of success doing. I think probably the most interesting sort of work that we do is the new integration that's not just, you know, soldering DB connectors and punching down wires, although we'll do that, you know, once in a while. But more often than not, it's trying to figure out how to make two pieces of software talk to each other, how to get data across a network. Mm-hmm. How to optimize for cost on a cloud computing platform, things like that.
Yeah, and speaking of cloud computing, you know, I think at this point, it's probably appropriate for some people, not appropriate for others, but you've got some experience in a hybrid approach where some things are in the cloud, things that make sense to be there, and some things are not in the cloud. Are you seeing people having to work through that math these days?
Yeah, absolutely, because it's hard to make the transition all at once, and like you said, it's not really practical to do it in a lot of cases. So, we've found some ways to transition people slowly while not trying to optimize too much and put things that may not be well supported on their network infrastructure or based on their workflow, say, you know, sometimes consoles or other, you know, locally controlled devices, depending on the company may not have the network to support it or the wherewithal in the staff to tweak slightly how they operate. So in those cases, we can take kind of ancillary gear you know, like processing, like phone systems, things like that, and move it to the cloud where the users don't really know the difference, but the company gets a lot of, you know, efficiency out of the deal.
It's interesting that a lot of the things that we do, we started doing in the cloud and we still do, like generally speaking, web streaming, sure. Certainly our website. Sure, back in 1997, you may have hosted your own website on your own computer. And you may have streamed yourself from a computer at your station, but you quickly found out you ran out of bandwidth. You, right. You ran out of gas doing that. So those things, we just naturally assume that's in the cloud. My banking, that the bank's not at, I mean, the computer's not at the bank. Right. It's in the cloud somewhere. So as stations are thinking, well, what does it make sense to put in the cloud? You mentioned perhaps phone systems, mm-hmm. Maybe processing. Backup automation. I don't know what else may be likely to go.
Really, the biggest things that to speak broadly, the things that they can go into the cloud most easily are the things that require, are the least latency intensive, right? Yeah. So you know, processing. Obviously, you're going out to your STL. It doesn't really matter if you're 1 second delayed or 8 seconds right. delayed or
about,
whatever.
We're talking about station processing, not mic processing.
Right. Exactly.
Mic processing, not good in the cloud.
Right. Yeah. That would have some people. I'd be a lot more bruised. People throwing headphones at me. Station processing, stream processing, FM processing. Like I said, things like phone systems, where obviously it is latency matters. But, you know, we're dealing with the public switch telephone network, and there's already some latency inherent to the system. Right. So, you know, another 20, 30, 40 milliseconds isn't going to break the bank. Things like that have been really straightforward to move into the cloud from a user perspective, because we can make it really transparent for them.
Good deal. Sean, if people want to reach you or your colleagues, you're at Inrush.
Yeah.
Got a website.
Yeah, inrush.net. Do systems integration, so both traditional studio transmitter site projects, and then, like we're talking about, the new wave of integration of not just making the boxes work together, but making the software work together.
Good deal. Sean, good to see you, man. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thanks
for having me.
On your way through that crowd, would you grab Alex Hartman for me?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay, thanks a lot. It's This Week at Radio Tech. We're live at the Tuscany at the Public Radio Engineering Conference. We'll be right back after this word from VoxPro.
Hey, what's happening? St. John here, coming to you from Command Central, and wanted to tell you about the absolute best partner you can have in radio. I'm talking about, boom, Wheatstone's VoxPro. Lots of different audio software out there. Why VoxPro? It's the only software designed to do what we needed to do, which is record, edit, playback in real time. When I say lightning fast, I'm going to show you how fast you can edit stuff up in VoxPro right now. Literally three clicks on the controller, mark left, mark right, everything that gets marked, you hit delete, it goes away. It's literally that fast. So we're going to take this part right here. Boom. From caller 9 to him saying, I'm ready.
Five. Ready for that secret sound.
Boom. All of that stuff, hit delete, it goes away. Here's your edit.
Our tackling secret sound, caller 9.
I'm ready, St. John.
One of the best features of version 7, this is awesome. It's effects macros, and you can literally put a chain of effects together so that instead of having to normalize a phone bit and then use noise reduction on it and EQ it and all that, you can literally build a chain. One button, this button, this one's called call right here. I just click that. All of those processes happen instantaneously. Final thing that I love about VoxPro, and there's so much more to get into, but one of my favorite things, you can load it on a laptop. I've literally done my show from a hotel room in Armenia to the conference room at, this was fun, jury duty. Great thing, no one could tell the difference. VoxPro makes it totally easy. Telling you, if you're looking for the best on-air partner, call my friends at Wheatstone, ask them about VoxPro, and you will be glad you did.
And if you actually want to buy a VoxPro, call Broadcasters General Store. They're the dealer for VoxPro. BGS.cc is the website, or you can call them at the memorized number, 352-622-7700. Shane Finch is the sales manager there, and of course, just a whole family operation with a lot of friendly, friendly people who know their business. All right, we got one last person to talk to here from the Public Radio Engineering Conference, and that's can I touch you? Okay. Alex Hartman. Hey, Alex.
Hey, Kirk. How you doing?
I'm great. You gave a presentation today about virtualization. And on the one hand, I talk about this. On the other hand, your hands are very dirty with this.
Yes, you preach to the choir, and I have to make it work. So,
you got a few high points from your talk today, which is full of practical hands-on information a lot of it gotten through some blood, sweat, and tears.
Very much so. And I think I offended some of the people that were the, we'll call them elder engineers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. It's like, you have to learn this. This is the way the industry wants to go. You, if you want to keep doing this, this is how it works.
Right.
So
right,
you that education level of finding guys. Grandkids probably set up your iPhone, so maybe they can help you with this. But yeah.
Whoever used to set the clock on the VCR.
Right. What? I get it, but nobody else will. But those kinds of things. So you need to learn this world. You have to be here because this is how the manufacturers want to go, and you as a station need to know how to use it. So my presentation is, how are you there yet versus Kirk telling us, are we there yet?
Yeah.
So big difference there in verbiage. So understanding how that environment works, whether you go head first and go way deep like I did at WPR, or if you go into it a little bit with the toe into the deep end, see how it goes. Get comfortable with it, learn it, and make mistakes. You're not going to get it right the first time. You're not going to get it right the second time. I promise you won't even get it right the ninth time. But eventually you have to practice that.
It is interesting, and maybe you can speak to this, how the different proponents work together to make this work. For example, I'm going to be building a new FM station this summer. I'll be handling most of the IT, but there's some things I don't know how to do. I may hire Sean Dolan to do a couple things for me. Could hire perhaps you if you do that. But also, I will be getting my colleagues at the Telus Alliance, and I'll be paying for it, for them to remote in and do the finer points of the setup that I don't need to know how to do because it has to be done exactly once.
Right.
This collaboration of different specialties, even within IT, is that a pretty common way to go forward?
Very much so. I mean, in the IT sphere, everybody has their specialty, right? So there's a guy who knows how the VMware system works, for instance, or Proxmox, but then there's the guy who understands how the networking inside of there works, or the how to do security inside of that world, or and controlling it to the outside world, or networking, you know, routing around the world for that matter. If you've got remote studios all over the place that need to be able to access that environment, or desktops, or resources, all of that, each of those people have a specialty. So you got to put all those guys in the same room and say, here's the goal,
yeah,
draw me a picture.
Exactly.
You know, exactly. Talk to me like I'm five.
Wow. And is it, how do you find an engineer who can just help organize those things, but may not know how to do them all?
So lean into the vendors, obviously. You know, the Telus Alliance does have a pretty good grasp on how this stuff is starting to work.
Right.
You know, other vendors are starting to do that as well. But reach out to those guys. If you're a VMware customer, even ESXi, you can do pay per incident. It's a $500 phone call, but you'll get an answer, you know, and figure that side out. And quite honestly, the way everybody else learned it so far is YouTube and Reddit. So there's someone out there who's already done it for you. Chances are you'll find that how-to.
You know, for my project that's coming up, I literally had to make a Google slideshow where I put the different pieces at the studio or at the transmitter site and present that to my partners, my mm-hmm. business partners. We ended up saying, we're going to put everything at the transmitter site.
Yep.
That just was going to work for us.
Sure.
But we're totally open to doing it. There's nothing wrong with the other ways. So we had three ways that could work. It was a matter of degrees of which one was better for us.
Well, what's your comfort level? What's the pain tolerance? And how much money are you losing when it turns off?
Yeah, yeah.
That's the question.
If everything's the transmitter site, we got to buy one generator.
Right. But you also have one lightning strike to kill it all.
True. Grounding will be important. And,
right.
Yeah. Lightning mitigation.
Computers don't like Mother Nature any more than anything else. Yeah.
So many transmitters have computers in them nowadays, too. In fact, our transmitter will.
Yep, exactly. So that's a sensitivity right there. Yeah. So gone are the days of the Continental lasting 50 years. When there's a computer inside, plan on a replacement about 10.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, just because that's the way they are now. They're not made for 50-year lifespans. I mean, return business, guys. But yes, the virtualization world is here to stay. It's not going anywhere. IT has been doing it for years, so what broadcast is trying to bring to the table is nothing new to these people. It's just learning the language properly to understand what each other is doing. IT guys don't care about, well, it's audio as the payload. No, it's multicast. That's all they care about. Just tell me it's multicast. Here's how it's done, and they understand multicast.
You know, this is interesting. Somebody should write an article, maybe you should, about what language does a broadcast engineer want to know to speak to the IT guy for a better insurance, things are going to get done. We have to do that in the SIP world. When I have a conference call with someone who wants to buy a phone system from Telos,
right,
and we have somebody from the phone company on, there's a language barrier.
There is.
And I've learned some of the phrases that make them go, oh, yeah, we can do that.
Right, exactly.
That's all you want.
Yeah, the phone, like you said, the phone company has had their own language for years that no one ever heard outside of the phone company, and now it's coming to light because of IP. Same with audio and so on. You want a really good lesson in how multicast works? Call your local cable company.
Oh.
Your cable modem, your TV is all IP-based. So it's all multicast video.
Yeah.
Even satellite services are multicast channels delivered over satellite. You know, so those guys already get it. They're out there. So reach out to those knowledge bases, you know, talk to, you know, industry colleagues. Come to APRE and PREC. For the public side, we don't mind if you're commercial. You can come too.
That's good to know, actually.
Yeah, because it's perfectly okay. We're sharing knowledge here. And that's what the whole point of it is. There's no business competitive edge on our side. We just want to be educated in the industry of where are we going and why are we doing it, instead of reinventing that wheel that IT has already done. And then when you go to these IT professionals who are, quite honestly, better than you and me, and they just look at you like, you're crazy. We don't want to do anything with you. So you have to learn to speak their language, absolutely.
Alex Hartman, thank you so much. I always learn, and it's like drinking from a fire hose when I talk to Alex Hartman. We got to go. This has been This Week in Radio Tech, our 640th episode from the Tuscany Hotel Suites Casino Conference Center and large bathrooms and
palatial
bathrooms. And next week we'll be live on the NAB show floor, and we'll play it back on Thursday as well, because the NAB will be over before Thursday. Huge thanks to Suncast for making the show work. Thank you very much, Suncast. We'll see you next week on This Week in Radio Tech.